Good day and welcome to the official podcast of Pursuit Athletic Performance.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining me. I'm Coach Al Lyman. Welcome to this new edition of the Pursuit Athletic Performance podcast. As always, we've got a great, at least in my opinion, a great show for you today on the podcast. I'm super psyched because now I think of myself as an ultra runner. We've got a couple of awesome ultra runners on the podcast today. First and foremost, a co-host of the Ultra Runner podcast himself, Ethan Venick-Lassu. And also we've got our own Debbie Livingston with us as well. Many of you out there probably listen to Ultra Runner podcast, and if you don't, you certainly want to. And Ethan, among his many ventures, is a Hoka ambassador and a V-Fuel ambassador, and of course, as I mentioned, a co-host with URP. And I think all of our listeners know who Debbie is. So without further ado, welcome, guys. Thanks for joining me on the call today. Ethan, how are you? And Debbie, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. Oh, I'm great. Thanks for having me on the show. Whoops, sorry, Deb.
No, okay.
Well, I think I let you guys in together, so my bad there. So listen, it is cool to have you guys on, and you know, Ethan, I think you and I connected after the Miwok 100K, which was back on May 2nd. Interestingly, I think I, if I remember correctly, reached out to you in part because you had connected with Debbie on the race course. So, Deb, tell us how you reconnected with Ethan out at Miwok.
Well, we were at the start of the race, climbing up all those stairs, heading up. We just, you know, kind of came into lockstep together and just started chatting. And what was funny is that we realized we had a lot in common, and we knew a lot of people in common, and also had been in the ultra running scene pretty much about the same amount of time. So yeah, we had a lot to talk about, and it just kept going, and until a certain point where Ethan just blew my doors in, and I didn't see him again after that.
Any chance with me? I'm trying to remember at this point when I fell on my face in the first mile.
But you haven't start.
Yeah, I'm well known for not being able to finish ultras without some blood somewhere and falling on my face. And this time I managed to get it out of the way and literally in the first mile going up the stairs on the Dipsy Trail. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sort of typical for me, but... But, yeah, a little bit embarrassing. I prefer to do that later on in the race when there's not a lot of people looking at me while I do it.
So you guys didn't know each other before chatting on the climb up to Cardiac, huh?
No. But as Debbie said, we had a lot of friends in common. You know, the ultra community is fairly small still, even though the sport's growing rapidly. And, you know, I back in 2003, founded and was team director for the VASC Ultra Running Team back in the day. And then after VASC discontinued that program, Debbie was sponsored by VASC when they were working more with individual athletes after they had gotten rid of the team. So we had that in common, and obviously a lot of folks that we knew through that, and as she said, we'd kind of been at it about the same amount of time, or I think plus or minus, one never exactly knows, sort of about the same age, and just had very sort of similar perspectives on the sport. So it was, you know, and I'm a very chatty runner. I also have a tendency to go out way too fast in races, so, you know, chatting early on in a race with somebody is a really good way of keeping myself under control.
Right. It's kind of funny, Ethan, you know, you refer to back in the day as the early 2000s, like it was so long ago. I mean, it kind of reflects, you know, how young the sport of ultra running, you know, really is.
Yeah, no, you know, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I think, you know, growing dramatically. I mean, we, you know, you don't have to look too far beyond Dean Karnazes and Born to Run and Scott Jurek and, you know, a few of those really sort of noticeable or recognizable figures in our sport who contributed to that growth. But boy, I tell you, even looking back 12, 13 years from when I started in 2002 with my first race, it's a different sport. You know, I talk a lot about how we as a community can manage the changes in the sport. You know, there's some things about ultra running that are really unique and special, and we want to make sure that we keep those values and those traditions alive, but at the same time recognizing that change is inevitable, the sport is progressing, we're getting a whole new range of just unbelievably talented youngsters into the sport, and so, you know, it's changed. But I think that there's some things that you know, folks like us that have a voice in the sport as either as elite athletes or as race directors like Debbie, or, you know, hosting a podcast like you and me, we all have a role to play in sort of preserving some of those traditions. So it's an exciting time.
Yeah, it definitely is. You know, for our listeners' benefit, that Miwok 100K, which Debbie and I traveled out from Connecticut to participate in. Well, I was participating. Debbie was racing, finished fourth overall woman. Congratulations, Deb.
Thank you.
And Ethan, you were there as well. This is the 20th anniversary for Miwok this year in the Marin Headlands. And so that's sort of, by ultra running standards, sort of an old classic event. And man, wow, what an incredible race day it was across the board. You know, I mean, just amazing trails, an amazing part of the country. And you're from California. In fact, you're talking to us from California right now. Mm-hmm. Ethan, had you done a Miwok before? Was it the first time you were there?
So, you know, that, it's funny. No, that was, you know, I've run about 60 ultras now, and I've been at this since 2002. I ran my first ultra in 2002. And Miwok, strangely, is a race that I'd never done before. And I think I was with Debbie when I realized this running up the hill. But I had never actually, out of 60 or so ultra finishes, I'd never actually finished 100K. My third ultra was the Hurt 100 back in the day when you could run it as 100K or 100 miler. I DNF'd there. Last year at Miwok, I ran Miwok last year, but I didn't finish. I had a little injury pop up. And then this one was my first actual 100K finish, which was, it was sort of funny to realize that in the middle of a race. Oh, my God. So, yeah, so it was my first time finishing it. And, you know, and then, of course, there was 35 miles of the course that I had never seen before. So that was pretty exciting.
Wow, that's awesome. So congratulations on your finish as well, man. That's really cool. You know, I had introduced you earlier as the co-host of the Ultra Runner podcast, but I think I mentioned to you before we got on the call that I had spent a little time on your website, ethanzenicklawson.com, I think it is, right?
Yeah.
And so I was reading a little bit about your story, man. What's your story? Tell our audience a little bit about who you are.
Sure. Yeah, no. It's been as they say, what a long, strange trip it's been. I grew up here in California. I went back east to the University of Rochester for college because I couldn't find any place else that was colder.
Nice work, man. Yeah. You succeeded there.
Yeah, I really sort of maximized that one. Then after college, I moved to Washington, D.C. I had gotten involved in politics. I spent 6 years working as a political consultant and then on and off for the Clinton White House, doing advanced, traveling all over the country. And, you know, during that period of time, I'd always been an athlete growing up. I rode crew. I played tennis. I, you know, played a little bit of volleyball. I mean, kind of you name it. And I'd always been really, really quite fit. Anyways, I came back to California at the end of 1997, just really done with the sort of political scene. But more surprisingly, I weighed 250 pounds. I'm 5'10", 5'11", somewhere in there. So I'm not a big guy. I'm not a tall guy. 250 on me is let's just say it wasn't a healthy weight for me.
Portly.
And looked in the mirror. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said you were portly.
I was a big boy. Yeah, I had a 44-inch waist, an 18.5-inch neck, and you know, I was right at that, at the edge between where I could buy clothes at Macy's and where I actually had to go to a special store. So, yeah, so I had, you know, I looked in a mirror one day and said, God, this is, you know, this is not a sustainable weight for me. Boy, I've got to make a change in my life. I joined a local gym, met these two brothers who were ex, I guess, former Marines is the appropriate term. And said, you know, look, I can't afford to have a weekly trainer, but can you help me put together a training program? And they were like, yeah, no problem. They put together this great plan for me. I started on the recumbent bike because that was all I could do. Went from the recumbent bike to the regular bike, to the elliptical, to the Stairmaster, to the treadmill. And the goal was, and the funny thing was, I didn't realize how overweight I was. And so my goal was just to get back down to 200 pounds. And when I got to, and my goal was get to 200 pounds, I'll start ski racing again. So I got to 200 pounds, looked, and I started ski racing again. And I said, boy, you know, this isn't where I want to be either. So I said, okay, the next goal was if I get down to 170 pounds, I'll buy myself any bike I want. So I got down to 170 pounds, bought myself this gorgeous Italian racing bike and started riding. And, you know, it just sort of one thing led to another. Just about 2 years later, well, actually about a year later, I was racing bikes pretty competitively all over Northern California. It led to racing, you know, around the U.S. and got down to about 158 pounds and was racing pretty well, doing well. Long story short, basically the way that I got into running, however, was I had never been a runner, you know, since middle school. I ran 10Ks in middle school and I was pretty good at it then, but I just had lost interest. One day a friend calls and says, hey, do you want to run the San Francisco half marathon with me? I said, are you high? He said, I haven't run, you know, more than a mile since I was 13 years old. I'll die. She's like, oh, shut up. You race bikes, you climb, you ski, you'll be fine. I said, fine. When in is this thing? She said, next weekend. Oh, fine. And, you know, at the time I was single. I was like, okay, you're cute. I'll go. She promised me that she was slow. I said, fine, I'll do this thing. So I show up race morning, and she calls me. She says, you're going to kill me. I can't make it. Oh. So I ran the thing anyways, and I ran, you know, for a non-runner, a fairly decent time. I ran like 1:43. And afterwards, it wasn't like I had this epiphany moment where I was like, oh, yeah, I got to go. You know, I got to do another one of these. And no, you know, I patted myself on the back and was like, hey, yeah, okay, I feel good about having done that. But I was done. 2 days later, I'm sitting on the floor of my apartment, and PBS and what comes on but a documentary called A Race for the Soul about Western States. And I said, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. By the way, this is the same way that I got into skydiving and base jumping. So I think the message here is I probably shouldn't watch too much TV. but I thought, you know, this is really, really something special and unique. I'm going to do that. And mind you, this is with a total of 13 miles in my legs. So I got online the next day, tried to sign up, and back then even you couldn't just sign up. You had to qualify and get in through a lottery. But I looked for a qualifier, and I ran my first 50-miler 10 weeks to the day after I ran that first half marathon. Lucky got in my first try through the Western States Lottery, and that was about a 50-50 chance back then. And I ran Western States 11 months to the day after I started running. Finished, but the cool part of all of it is that's where I met my wife. So, you know, she makes fun of me for being impulsive and getting these great ideas after watching TV. I remind her that if I didn't do that, I never would have met her. So,
right. Wow.
And my family likes to make fun of the fact that she beat me by 7 hours, but she was second place to Ann Trayson 4 times and has run Western States in 1832. I don't feel too bad about being 7 hours behind her.
Yeah.
No.
Well, 18.5 hours is, in my book, an incredible performance. And Deb can speak, you know, personally to that, having been side by side with Larissa Danis last year. And I think about the same amount of time, right, Deb?
Yeah, pretty close.
Yeah, Larissa was a minute faster than Emma.
Okay.
Huh? I keep track of these things. And Larissa's a friend, both of ours, so.
Yeah.
So you go out there 10 months, you know, after the first half marathon to complete, you know, sort of the big daddy of all 100 milers. And I know that must have been an incredibly hard day for you, you know, because I think across the board, you know, one of the things that I've learned in the little bit that I've dabbled in ultra running, which in some respects goes back for many years, but in reality goes back, at least in this phase of my life, back to May 2nd. But it seems like across the board, so many athletes, when they talk about, you know, their first big ultras, and Deb, you can speak to this too, obviously, because you have so much experience, but they talk about how difficult those long races are early in their career. I know Bob Shebest, in a recent interview you did with him, who's a very old friend of mine from back in his days in Connecticut, but he even talked about how difficult his early ultras were, you know, and for a guy of his talent. How difficult was that Western States for you?
You know, it's interesting. I mean, like I said, so my first 50-miler was really tough. I ran my first 50 10 weeks to the day after I started running, so 2.5 months. And I was total, I don't mind admitting, I was totally unprepared for that. But you know, the goal really was to qualify for states. And back then, the standard was one mountain 50-miler in under 10 hours, or three in under 12 hours. So it either rewarded speed or perseverance, which I love. that one was actually harder for me than Western States. By the time I got to states 11 months later, I had, I think it was my 13th ultra. So I was I banged out quite a lot. It was either my 12th or 13th. I was doing about one a month for that first year, sometimes a couple in a month. You know, it's not that it wasn't difficult. I mean, my God, running 100 miles, no matter what Carl Meltzer says, running 100 miles is a big deal. It's a long, long way. And Western States, from my perspective, the thing that was most difficult for me was that that year was one of the really hot years. It was about 105 at the top of the canyon and about 115 at the bottom of the canyons. So that was really the biggest challenge for me. It was funny because when we were interviewing Bob the other day, Eric was asking him about, you know, does he ever have these feelings of like, what the hell am I doing out here? This is crazy during ultras. And he was surprised that I never had that. You know, it doesn't mean that I don't go to very low places in my races. I mean, my gosh, I had a horrific run at the Lake Sonoma 50 a couple months ago, but never once do I question why I'm doing it. It's just a lot of fun to me, and the community of people, you know, even on my worst day, it's a pretty cool thing to be out there. So, I like I said, it's not that Western States wasn't hard. It was just, I think I had tempered myself mentally and physically over the preceding 11 months at that point so that I could get it done. Now, mind you, it wasn't fast. I was 26:13 or something like that, you know, it was a great experience. I will even go so far as to say it might be the most important thing I've ever done in my life.
Wow. Well, Deb, what are your thoughts? You know, I only throw it out there because, you know, I know so many of our listeners right now are, many of them are multi-sport athletes, many of them are road runners, and I think some of them, and Deb and I are actually hosting a camp this weekend, Ethan, here in Connecticut. You know, many of those runners are going to be talking about, you know, that first ultra that may be some wear down. And, you know, there's that underlying fear about, you know, the difficulty and the challenges. And, you know, so it's good to hear, you know, from folks like you that have that experience. You know, and of course, you know, what you want to know and what you want to believe is that, you know, that you'll be up to the task and that it's all worth it in the end.
Well, I'd have to agree. I'm there with Ethan about, I never question why I'm doing it, but sometimes you're out there and you're thinking, I don't want to be here. I'd rather be somewhere else. And then you come out of that. You know, that's happened to me in the past. Going back to my very first ultra, I remember it vividly. It was Vermont 50 back in 99. And what I remember most from it, really, is the finish and how emotionally charged I was. I mean, I crossed the line, and I ran right into the arms of the woman who just came in right ahead of me. And she and her, the other woman who came in first, they're both seasoned runners, ultra runners, and I chatted with them on the trail a little bit. And this was my first. I went from, you know, trying a, running a couple marathons and dabbling in a few short trail races to saying, I can do this 50-mile race, and I'm going to give it a try. Knowing that, it would be challenging, but that's why you do it. It's going to be hard. And you put yourself out there to experience all the challenges that arise. And obviously, it really, as you seen at Miwok, Al, being your first 100K, is that you're exposed to so much raw emotion because it's you and the trail, and there's a long time, and there's a lot of time to think. And to feel the pain and the challenge and the the self talk that happens in there, some of it negative, some of it positive, and then just being able to complete that, I remember just bursting in tears because it was just so emotionally overwhelming for me. I don't typically do that anymore in races, although if it's something that I've really worked hard towards. And it's something I've always wanted to do, then I could see that happening. Or I during the race, I overcame a lot to get to that finish line. Then I would probably be overcome with emotion. But I don't think there's the first race is any particularly any harder than the others. It's just you almost don't even know what to expect. So in one way, it's almost easier because you're not. You don't know what you're going to, how you're going to feel, how much it's going to hurt, what's going to happen emotionally and mentally. So that in that respect, it's actually may not be the most challenging one.
You know,
funny.
That's great stuff.
Let me just interject one quick thing here. It was funny. I felt very much the same way as you, Debbie, until last year. I ran my first 100-miler in 10 years at Cascade Crest. I was a blubbering mess at the finish line. I mean, just a mess. And I never, ever would have expected that, you know, as I said, at the time I had, you know, 50 some odd ultra finishes. It was my third 100-miler. I was just like, you know, but no, it was definitely, it was good to know that I could do it again after 10 years off. But it was just, I always say that ultras and especially anything over 50, but really mostly hundreds, it's like living a life in a day, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout the course of our life, you know, there's obviously ecstatic highs and there's horrific lows, and it's just what life is. And it's the same thing in a 100-miler. And you can feel absolutely horrible at mile 30 or 40 or 50, and then at mile 80 be bouncing down the trail like a little kid. And it's just weird that way. You never expect that would be the case. But at the end of Cascade Crest, we were doing sub 8-minute miles towards the finish, and I felt great. I'd felt crappy for the previous 20 some odd miles, but all of a sudden I felt fantastic, you know, running to the finish line. So it's interesting to see the highs and lows, and it, like I said, it's sort of a microcosm for life.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great way to describe it, Ethan, no doubt. Deb, do you remember what you replied back to me after reading my race report from Miwok, because I thought it was absolutely classic. Do you remember it? I have it right in front of me if you don't.
Well, you had something along the lines of you know, it strips you raw. Long-distance racing strips you raw and allows those emotions and feelings to really show up. And you So with that, the negative thoughts can pop up, and that's part of the battle of a long distance race, and you have to overcome that, because that's going to happen to just about everyone who's doing these long races. Come out on top. And you did.
Yeah,
that's huge.
You know, it's funny when you get to be, and I'm 55, and Deb, I think you just turned 40, and I think when you get to this stage in life, and perhaps it's one of the reasons why there's so many really successful and accomplished runners in ultra running that are in sort of our age bracket, is it really does lend itself to the wisdom that sort of accumulates over the years. And going back to what you said, Ethan, about how it's sort of a microcosm of life is just so very true. Deb, what you said to me, just so I, because I really think this is awesome, you said long distance running strips down all the barriers and leaves you raw to your thoughts and feelings. You took those thoughts, meaning me, and feelings, and transformed them to create joyful and inspiring memories in the end. Mm-hmm. And, Ethan, you talked about your finish, right? And isn't that really what this sport is all about, through those highs and lows, and then to bring it home to the finish? As Deb will say, I was pretty ecstatic at the end of Miwok as well, too, thrilled to have my son there and thrilled to see Debbie there, and it was an amazing moment.
It's one of the things that I've always loved about this sport, and frankly, it's one of the reasons that 13 years later I still am at it, is that, and I alluded to this before, but it's a very egalitarian sport in some ways. Western states, is I always describe it as being sort of the Tour de France of ultra running, and the great thing is that the fastest runners in the world line up with back of the packers, and we're all there on the same trail on the same day. And then the thing that I think is even cooler is that the elite athletes typically hang out and are standing there cheering on the back of the packers when they finish. And that's so different from the road racing background that I come from, or that I dabble in as well, I should say. And and certainly the bike racing background that I come from, that's just, it's entirely anathema to that. And so it's a really neat sport from that perspective. The community is what makes it special. But the thing that I was getting at is that I think the reason for that spirit is that we all go through the same things. Rob Krar might be out there for 15 hours and change getting Western States done, and back of the packers are finishing in 30. But they've hit the same every spot on the same trail on that same day in the same 105 degree temperatures. And I just think that's a big part of what makes this sport so different and exciting.
Good stuff. Ethan, just a quick question while I'm thinking of it. Did you participate in the study which the Stanford students were conducting on race morning in Miwok?
It's funny that you asked that. I had started to, but I'm embarrassed to say that I have a tendency of being a little bit, disorganized on race mornings, which doesn't work very well. My wife, who I adore in every way, and I'm so grateful that we share this interest in and love of running ultras, but she and I have very different approaches. She gets out of the door just in time, and I know that I'm disorganized, so I feel like I need to get out of the door a half hour before her. Anyways, long story short, no. That morning I was not participating because I was scrambling around to find safety pins and all of those things I should have done the night before.
Ah, okay. Yeah. I had, and I think, Deb, I know, I believe you participated as well, too, right?
Mm-hmm.
I did, yeah. Ethan, I reached out to, because part of that study was a follow-up after the race, and as it turns out, all of the students that were there were members of the Stanford Intervention Lab, and I reached out to the sort of the research head of that, which is a gentleman by the name of Omid Fatui, and asked him a little bit more about the study, and he sent me a very lengthy email sort of describing what their goal was with it, and I actually asked him if he would come on to our podcast to talk about it in greater length, because basically they're studying all of the same kinds of things that, you know, that we're discussing right now as it relates to, you know, your belief system and the thoughts you have and all the things that happen out there on the race course. Really fascinating stuff. I'm going to forward you, actually, the email that he sent me, so you'll have an opportunity to read it. And I don't think I have your email, but I'll get it from you.
We'll get it to you, no problem.
You know, sort of a reflection of this day and age in which we live. You and I have been communicating on messaging on Facebook, right?
Funny. I was commenting on that the other day in one of my blog posts about, you know, Facebook. You either love it or you hate it. But the fact of the matter is, I love the fact that I get a chance to interact with some folks that I know or have met once or twice, but then also folks who I've never met who may know me through Ultra Runner podcasts or, you know, or through Hoka or something like that. And it gives me a way to sort of keep up to date on what they're doing, you know, encourage them and, you know, just kind of take that community spirit that we value so much that we share on race day and kind of extend that out. But it's funny. You're absolutely right. It's become sort of the next evolution after after email. Then there was text messaging, and now there's Facebook.
Right.
So.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm sure there's a bunch of things that I don't even know about yet that the younger of us are using, and you know. Anyway, all good. I'll get your email and forward it off to
sure.
you. You know, as we as we wrap up the podcast, one of the things I definitely would like to ask you to share with our audience, because of your experience, and Deb, I'd love for you to jump in on this as well too, is just share maybe some words of advice. I don't know, a tip or something you've learned that you know you feel it would be valuable to share with maybe a novice out there or someone who's just embarking on the sport. I got to say, you know, I've been a runner for so many years, but most of it on the road and a lot of years in the sport of triathlon as well, too. A lot of triathletes are listening right now, but boy, the community in ultra running, and it's because of people like you and Debbie and many others, is just an amazing community. But if you would, and Debbie, you as well, jump in after Ethan, just share some bits of advice for our listeners.
Debbie, go ahead. I've been talking way too much.
I guess the advice for ultra running is that it's what you mentioned before, Ethan mentioned before about, you know, being a microcosm of life. I've told that to others quite a bit with emotions. You experience a lifetime of emotions in that course of the race. I feel it's important to test the limits of what you're capable of, whether that be a 50-mile race, 100-mile race, or an Ironman, or whatever. You learn so much about yourself, about what you can handle, positive self-talk, how you can overcome, and then it gives you that just that strength in the other parts of your life to look back, reflect back on that race and that long distance event or whatever you did, and say, if I can do that, then I can do this. And that's why I think it's so important for people to get out there and try something that looks, that feels, that you think is out of your limits, but it's not.
That's good stuff, Deb. You know, you've been doing this sport, you know, even though we think of it as a relatively young one, for a really long time. And, boy, you know, you and I value longevity so much. What do you think is your key to having been able to stay not only in the sport and remain injury-free but also continue to excel at a really high level? I mean, for so many years now.
A couple things. Taking some quote-unquote time off within those years. My time off was forced with being pregnant. And what I consider time off may not be time off to another person. For me, it's just not doing an ultra in that year, but still racing at other distances, and still training, but training at a lower capacity, and doing a lot of different things. So that forced me to back off for some time, and I think it's important for everyone to do that. Also, I do a lot of cross training, yoga, biking, swimming, hiking, and then just eating a really clean diet, because that's your fuel, and that's what repairs. You need all those, all different nutrients to repair your body. I eat mostly vegan, vegetarian, vegan like 98% of the time. So I think that really makes a big difference in longevity.
Yeah, good stuff. Thanks. So, Ethan, what do you think? What gold nuggets do you have?
Sure. I think the first one is really understanding that, you know, on one hand, running 100 miles or, hell, even running 50 miles, that's kind of mind-boggling to most people, right? You know, you think, wow, that's this great physical achievement. And it is. There's no question. But the reality is, it's 80%, maybe even 90% mental. I wasn't in any condition to run that first 50-miler, and yet I did. And it was, you know, it was because I really wanted what was at the other end. I wanted to qualify for Western States. And so having that, being very clear on why you're doing these things really helps get you through those down parts. You know, those periods when you're feeling just awful, where you're sore, where you're emotionally drained, all those things. Being really clear about why you're doing it is really critical. Then second within that is, you know, and again, everybody has different goals with their running. You know, Debbie and I are trying to run competitively, and that may be different than somebody who's trying to run more recreationally. And that's great, and there's room for all of that in the sport. But... you know, I think one of the things that I've found is mixing it up. I had, like Debbie, I had a little bit longer layoff, I think about 5 years, that I took off from ultra running, and about two or three of those that I took off completely from running. But when I came back, it was through road racing. And so here I came back, you know, at 42, 43, I was faster than when I had sort of left the sport at 37. Considerably so, about 45 minutes faster over 50K, you know, more than an hour faster over 50 miles. And so mixing it up, spending some time on the road, working that turnover, but then at the same time, you know, once you've done it for a little while, you know what kind of courses are best suited to your skills. I'm stepping out of my comfort zone this year. I'm going to be racing the Eiger Ultra Trail 100K. Race in Switzerland in July, which is completely out of my comfort zone because the thing has 22,000 feet of vertical. So that's kind of going against my advice, but normally I would tell folks, you know, stick to the things that you're really good at, but I also think doing something sometimes outside of your comfort zone is a great way to sort of revitalize your excitement, try something new, and maybe discover new talents that you didn't know you had. That's the hope, at least.
Awesome. Thanks so much. So, ultrarunnerpodcast.com. Folks should definitely check you out, and Eric, and I believe you got one other co-host as well, too. I mean, I really enjoy listening to the podcast, mainly because it's an opportunity to just kind of get a sense of what's happening, you know, in the sport, and, of course, getting some great advice from folks who are really experienced. I would, you know, I personally would suggest, Ethan, if you can, you know, try to get Debbie on there as well, too. I mean, she'd be a great guest for you guys, you know, and she's got a long, lengthy resume. I should be an awesome guest on URP, just saying.
I agree.
Awesome. So thanks a lot for joining us, Ethan, coming out, you know, from the West Coast. Good luck with your training for the race in Europe. That sounds amazing. I know, Deb, you got one coming up in Japan, right?
Well, that's not till September. I got myself into the Ultra Tour de Mount Fuji. So there'll be a lot of climbing and descending there. But that's what I love. And then, of course, a little bit of Carl Meltzer's fun, Speed Goat 50K, at the end of July. So that more rocks, more ups and downs, that's more my style. Ewok had a little too much dirt road in it for me. That's why Ethan, I lost him. That's why I lost him after that first, miles or so. He was gone.
Oh, you should have loved the last 2 miles, though.
Oh, I did.
Yeah, she loved that.
I fought a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, this is a great chat, and you know, I don't know exactly. I mean, I'll take some of the blame or the credit, depending. But we sort of morphed into a great discussion about the sport and the meaning of life, and it was awesome. I really enjoyed having you on, and thanks to all of our listeners for joining us here on this edition of the Pursuit Athletic Performance Podcast. Don't forget to leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes if you can. And Ethan, we'll be checking you out down the road. Good luck with your training.
Thanks so much.
URP, and Deb, we'll be seeing you really soon, like tomorrow.
That's right.
All right. Take care, everybody.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks a lot, guys. All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to the Pursuit Athletic Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a 5-star rating and review here on iTunes. Be sure to head over to PursuitAthleticPerformance.com to subscribe for free tips and strategies to help you get strong, get fast, and unleash the amazing athlete